So that happened. Democrats had a pretty rough night on election night for the midterms of 2014. And here to talk about it, I am Zach Carter, senior political economy for the Huffington Post.
Senior political economy?
Yeah, you just said you were the senior political economy.
So that happens.
Senior political economy reporter for the Huffington Post.
Yeah. Who are you guys? What are you doing in my office?
Yes, we're still recording. Yeah, go.
I'm Sam Stein, senior political for the Huffington Post.
And I'm Jason Lincolns. I'm not senior at shit. Yeah, I'm just, I write dick jokes about politics for the Huffington Post.
But you do it so well.
I do. So what can we say about tonight? Democrats got waxed.
You know, clearly it's a new day for Obama. And I think, you know, for Democrats, I think the real story is sort of what Democrats take away from this, at least at this juncture. And I think there's two things you could take away from this, right? It's like, one is we basically had nothing to run on, in part because we ran away from everything we had done. It's healthcare, immigration reform, or the possibility of immigration reform.
What amounted to an economic recovery?
Yeah, an improving economy. None of it really came up. And, you know, maybe it was that skittishness, that caution that really doomed Democrats. That's one theory. And then the other theory is that Obama himself is just so fucking toxic that, you know, he dragged down everyone else. And you can't talk about Obama. You can't associate yourself with the president, in which case you're in a real catch-22 because you really have nothing to talk about. So, you know, going forward, it's going to be a lot of soul-searching. I know that's a cliche, but it is. And, you know, for the party, the only good thing is the 2016 map is a little bit better, but they have a lot – they got a lot of – you know, they have to think a lot about what they need to do the next 2 years and how they want to approach this president because he's still in the White House. So for them, they got to figure out how closely they want to be associated with this guy.
So, I mean, I'm really curious, like, because to me, if I were a Democrat, right, I would, and I were in the Senate in particular, I would look at what Mitch McConnell had just pulled off, which was brick wall obstruction, just total gridlock, and yet ultimately kind of victory. I mean, you could say he lost the Affordable Care Act, he lost Dodd-Frank, he lost the presidency in 2012. But he comes away from this thing ultimately being majority leader.
These are Pyrrhic victories, as or whatever you want to call them. I mean,
Pyrrhic victories.
In this case, it's like, yeah, you know, Mitch McConnell ends up running the Senate, but to what end does that get him? And you know, on the major policy grounds, he didn't stop Obamacare. Obamacare is still going to be a law of the land. He might chip away at it, but it's still there. And that's a much bigger, you know, victory for Obama than it is, you know, obviously than anything Mitch McConnell's done. And his number one objective was to make sure Obama wasn't reelected, and Obama was reelected. So until, you know, now this all changes if this sets the stage for something in 2016 and, you know, Republicans can then use this to catapult into the White House, then, yeah, you can make the case that Mitch McConnell really gamed this out 6 years ago when he started talking about this. But, you know, until the Republican Party gets hold of the presidency, I you know, this is all, you know, gamesmanship right
but,
now.
But if you're Harry Reid and you're presuming Harry Reid is going to be the minority leader, I mean, wouldn't you want to pursue a policy of obstruction? Wouldn't you want to look at this and say, hey, look, he didn't get punished for this. Like, let's just block everything and hope we win in 2016.
Because you're not – now you're obstructing – I mean –
Well, you're obstructing your president still, right?
Right, yeah.
Sort of, but you're also – but you.
There's advantages being – obviously, Harry Reid could be like, let's lay up in the cut, be the super minority for a while, stop this stuff from happening, roll up on filibuster after filibuster. I don't know if Harry Reid pulls that off because Harry Reid is, you know, at times had to carry the ball of filibuster reform. Yeah. He never took it as far as maybe a lot of people want him to get rid of it entirely. But – I'm not sure that's a game Harry Reid could play. Maybe another Senate minority leader from the Democrats can play that game. Maybe they don't have to worry about it. You know, one of the things that we started the night off talking about was like, what do the Republicans do right now?
Yeah.
And, you know, we had Tom Daschle on HuffPost Live, and he was like, well, you know, he was very optimistic. He said, well, you know, now the Republicans are on the hook for governing. They got to come and prove they can govern. So they got to put forth an agenda that has a chance of passing, maybe a chance of avoiding the veto pen. I was like, no, I don't. Nah. No, they don't.
People and they said won't. That in 2010 when they won.
There's too many people. There's too many people.
I remember in 2010 was like, oh, Boehner has now won the speakership. He has to.
Right. History repeats. Yeah. And there's too many people.
Like a classic Democratic impulse to be like, well, now they'll be serious.
Yeah, seriously. Yeah, and they won't be. Here, they won't be. So.
Well, it's not in Mitch McConnell's interest to, you know, work with the president, nor is it necessarily – well, it might be in his interest on some respects to work with the president. But the problem he'll have is that he'll have, you know, three or four members of his own caucus who are running for president.
Right.
And it's not going to be – certainly not going to be in Ted Cruz's interest to see any deal constructively cut with the president. It's, in fact, you know –
why would the House of Representatives go along with that? Even if McConnell came out tomorrow and said, we're going to be dealmaker extraordinaire.
We can step back and say some serious House Republicans will be like, okay, we can win an election where the turnout is 38%, where we're running in a lot of Republican states, although this election they won in blue states governorships. But let's put that aside for now. And you could say, you're a serious House Republican, you sit there, you could say, we need to do something differently for 2016. We can't be portrayed as the party that hates immigrants. We can't be portrayed as the party that just wants tax cuts for the rich.
And go back to the RNC autopsy report.
Yeah, we actually do need to do things so that we can't be caricatured by Democrats. And there will be serious Republicans who make that case in both chambers. But it always comes back to the issue of how hard would a Ted Cruz demagogue any effort to do anything, you know, resembling like the Dream Act, he would just go
pretty
nuts
hard
on it because it's his ticket to getting, you know, primetime billing as a leading Republican presidential candidate. So, you know, Mitch McConnell's in a tough spot. Maybe Daschle's right. I don't think he is, but either way, it's not like he can just sort of, you know, snap his fingers and say, okay, let's, you know, have a kumbaya moment of bipartisanship.
You talked about soul searching, and you know, the Republicans. People are mixed about whether the Republicans or not need to come up with an agenda.
Mm-hmm.
I think that when we talk about Democrats soul searching, I think that since Obama was elected in 08, you've had an election in 10, 12, and now 14.
Yeah.
And I think the theme of those three elections have been, yo, Republicans be crazy.
Yeah.
You know, and I think now we're coming into 2016. Probably Hillary Clinton's the standard bearer. If she runs, she'll shoot to the top, probably win the nomination.
Yeah.
And she's, you know, been a creature of Washington, and she needs to be the person who sets an agenda. And I think right now, if the Democrats want to like have successful soul searching, they need to be plotting out what are our big ideas. Where are we going? We want to win in 2016. Where do we want to take the country in 2020?
But that gets right back to Sam's point that he made at the beginning, which is that basically the Democrats didn't run on ideas this time around.
No, they ran on Republicans are crazy,
and they got clobbered.
I think Obama can continue to point out and stake out positions that emphasize how crazy the Republicans are if he wants to. I think he can still do that. I said earlier tonight on HuffPost Live that like if there's one thing Obama's good at, it's trolling. And he's been able to like hit the Republicans in their points of enragement. But now the people who are going to carry the ball from here to 2016 around a presidential campaign, they need to come up with something other than Cory Gardner likes person.
So I agree with that, and that is the point I was making earlier, which is if you can't defend or if you don't want to defend what you've done on health care or an improving economy for the top that is generally improving overall, or if you don't want to embrace immigration reform or deferred action in the moment, then you got to have something else you're willing to talk about. And, you know, what's interesting in some respects is, you know, for a while before health care reform was passed, health care reform was like that great big shining object that Democrats were promising to pursue. In every election they ran, they said, I am going to deliver comprehensive health care reform. We are going to do it. We're going to be the party that gets it done.
Yep.
And they did it, and it's like the cupboard is like kind of empty now because that was the big idea.
That's right. Yeah.
So you know, you talk to some of these strategists, and they say, okay, well, we're going to fill that void with, you know, various sort of economic security ideas and you know, family, you know, betterment policies, and that includes student loan stuff, you know, minimum wage, equal work, equal pay, all very important progressive concepts. But, you know, they're all, you know, relatively smaller than comprehensive health care reform, which is a really motivating and was a really motivating agenda item.
I have a big agenda item for them if
what
they want it.
What is it?
We extract
single beers.
No. Okay. This is a serious agenda item. We take the lesson from what went wrong with healthcare.gov's website rollout. Mm-hmm. What went wrong was that literally the federal government was not prepared to engage in the modern world as far as like information technology. Yeah. They had multiple agencies that could not speak to each other. Their data could not communicate over on one platform with each other.
Yeah.
In the United Kingdom, they had the same problem a number of years ago with their healthcare system when they tried to adapt it and put it online, and it got fucked up. And they responded by creating a cabinet level IT position that completely restandardized the entire way their government did IT.
I mean, Jason, I've heard you pitch this before.
And of course,
and it's a great idea.
And I'm already bored.
Are you already bored?
No, but actually,
do you understand?
I'm joking.
That everyone in the world right now to solve their problems to get what they want, they pull out their smartphone and they solve their problems. They get what they want, unless they're trying to interface with the federal government, and then they can't.
So I like the idea in theory. I think and I think it works.
You need to put people on a national.
I think the idea if I can summarize what you're trying to say is Democrats become the party not of less government, which is what Republicans want, but efficient government, making the government work better.
21st century government.
And I think that is I think that's a pretty good concept. Remember that Obama actually made this a key point in one of his earlier State of the Union addresses. He was going to completely rethink how the government operates, make it more efficient, consolidate certain departments that were duplicating activities. He even assigned Jeff Zients, who everyone knows is famous for restoring healthcare.gov, he assigned him to do that project. And they produced a project and it went absolutely nowhere. I think they run into a problem that for a lot of traditional Democrats, the idea of efficient government to them sounds very threatening because it means getting rid of government. Now, that might be outdated and antiquated, but it is something they run into.
Because I think you need if we're talking about the future direction of the Democratic Party, I think you got to have good guys and bad guys. I don't think you can just talk about making government work better. And the bad guys, the place where they're having success with bad guys is Elizabeth Warren talking about banks.
Yeah.
So I think you have to have some sort of platform that's centered around the concentration of corporate power because they're losing the money game. The money in politics game is clearly breaking for Republicans. This is the first election where that's been unequivocally clear.
Yeah.
And so it's, you know, they have less to lose by taking on corporate power in some ways, whether that's through antitrust policy, whether that's through
You're never going to make that case with Clinton as your figurehead.
That's tough.
Clinton, it's tied into this global initiative.
You know, when it comes down to it, it's nice. We can talk about these things and how they will play. But, you know, the truth of the matter is 2016, it's a totally different ballgame. Everything we're talking about in some ways is sort of irrelevant when we talk about 2016. We have different states at play. We'll have a different political dynamic. You'll have an incredibly different constituency, not just going out to vote, but actually existing
in the America. Presidential election, having all your voters packed into urban districts doesn't hurt you.
Yeah.
Like it does.
Right.
And so, there's going to be a lot of Democrats who, rightfully so, are really upset about what happened tonight. And this, for them, it should prompt a lot of discussion about how to move the party forward. The one saving grace is, you know, demographics and MAP. You know, the case that could very well be made, it probably should be made, is that if Democrats can't embrace their natural constituencies and if they can't gravitate towards their natural issues, they're going to have real problems. The good thing for Democrats is that in 2016, there's no real reason why they should run away from their natural constituencies or abandon their key issues because they line up in the states. We're talking about, you know, Illinois with Mark Kirk. We're talking about Ron Johnson, Wisconsin. We're talking about Pennsylvania with Pat Toomey, New Hampshire with Kelly Ayotte. Those are four, you know, Democratic-leaning states that will have senators up for election, the Republicans up for election. It would be silly if Democrats were to, you know, run away from doing immigration reform or not embrace Obamacare with those states on the map.
And a lot of those Democrats or those Republicans who are going to be defending those seats are kind of like corporate-aligned Republicans who the U.S. Chamber of Commerce wants them to vote for at least something like immigration reform.
Yeah.
And so if you end up forcing these guys to vote for your policy victory, they're not going to get comprehensive immigration reform because the House is going to block it.
Of course.
That's not going to happen.
Yeah.
But if you end up forcing those guys into a vote and
as long as it looks like the House is the one that blocked it.
But that's the thing. That's the thing about changing the Senate is that they won't be able to force them into a vote. And you'll just have whatever Mitch McConnell and John Boehner want to bring up is what they'll bring up.
Right.
So that's where this matters, is those votes that could put some of these people in tough binds won't be taken. And Harry Reid actually maybe overplayed this hand, which is that he didn't bring up a lot of things that would have forced tough votes because he didn't want those tough votes to be taken. And it ended up backfiring because suddenly all these Republicans were able to say, well, you voted with Obama 95% to 99% of the time. Well, yeah, because every vote that came to the Senate floor was a calculated, very easy
right.
vote that you should vote. I mean, even these Republicans were voting with Obama like 70% of the time because these votes were so ridiculous.
Should there be a post office?
Yeah, it's like, let's name this post office after Muhammad Ali. Oh, of course. I'm fucking do that. But people say that changing the Senate is not going to change anything. Maybe in some respects, but in terms of how the place is run and conducted and what type of votes people have to take and just the flow of legislation, it's going to be dramatically different.
We talked a little bit on HuffPost Live about this. How do the dynamics in the Senate change? You're of the opinion that, Zach, you're of the opinion that nothing's really changing, aside from maybe how judicial appointments get.
I think judicial appointments, and then also I think if you've watched the House, one of the things the House has done that's very clever is they've just trolled the hell out of the regulators. They've just made life a living hell for any federal regulator possible. They've been making document requests that are just absurd.
Right.
And the Senate will be able to do that now. And that really does gum up the works for the Obama administration.
Oh, sure. And then there's the whole appropriations process and whether money will be given for the implementation of any law. I mean, yeah, there might not be, dramatic pieces of legislation that were never going to come through anyway. They obviously still won't come through. But those budget fights are going to be super intense. I think there's going to be really interesting standoffs with the administration over, fine items in the budget, stuff that no one else would pay attention to, but it would matter. Yeah. And then the other thing I would add in addition to that is that the Senate now can the Senate investigative arm will now be run by Republicans, and they'll investigate Obama much like the House committee run by Daryl Issa has.
Yeah, the ISA, ISA is a great example. I mean, there are some things where ISA has done. He's got this funny record because every now and then he does stuff that's like pretty good.
Like Goldman Sachs counterparties.
Yeah. We know that AIG was basically a pass through bailout for.
Oh, totally. Yeah. There's such good ripe areas for oversight.
Yeah.
That anyone who was thinking straight could actually pursue, whether it's in the financial services realm or whatnot. But the flashy objects seem to distract Daryl Issa a lot more often than the substantive ones. And so I'm curious to see, I think John McCain is up for the head of this committee. And
The Levin Committee on Investigation.
Yeah, and it would be very interesting to see how he handles it and whether he goes for the shiny objects.
I don't think he's as ruthless a partisan as ISA is, but he definitely has his moments, and particularly on foreign policy.
Yeah,
he's very hawkish, and he takes like moral offense at the Democratic policy.
He has a lot of animus towards Obama too. I mean, why wouldn't he?
Yeah,
got his clock cleaned by Obama.
Exactly, but where ISA goes after like IRS and Fast and Furious, John McCain will, demand everything about the prosecution of the war in Syria. And so you'll just get a different realm of investigation, I think.
Yeah, I think a lot of people maybe look at this election as a situation where, oh, no, Republicans are going to try to pass all these laws. Well, they're not going to pass a bunch of laws. What they'll be capable of doing is a thing in a lot of ways far more insidious. It's like redirecting the sort of hive mind of government to places that are going to be either embarrassing for Democrats or going to be time wasters.
Yeah.
In a way, and we get back to the central problem, but will the Republican majority in the Senate join with the House in this new kind of like blossoming of good governance? The problem is that like everything you described, the whole gumming up of regulators, the whole like investigating things that shouldn't be investigated, we keep coming back to this idea that like bad, broken government is something that the GOP has lately decided is good for their brand.
I kind of just want to ask you guys what you thought the most meaningful lessons from tonight are. Maybe also what you thought the worst thing for Democrats was. For me, it's looking at the gubernatorial races.
Yeah.
The Senate, I think most sober Democrats knew was going to be gone.
Yeah.
But I mean, they lost Maryland at the governor level.
Yeah.
That seems like it's a pretty big deal. And I think Republicans can go out and make a really credible case for having a, you know, for the public rejecting Obama ideas right now. What do you guys think?
Well, I want to stick with governors because there's two threads here. One, you know, if you look at a policy level, it's funny because there's parts of this election that are in some respects very, you know, positive for the president. The minimum wage initiatives in Arkansas and Nebraska passed. I mean, those are like major tenets of what Obama wants to do federally.
Deep red states.
Yeah. I mean, and that's, you know, obviously Obama wants a federal wage hike, but, you know, absent that, the fact that deep red states are doing this is a positive for him and his administration. A lot of these candidates, Republicans who ran for Senate, ended up sort of crossing over into the realm of supporting Medicaid expansion. So, again, one of these sort of policy elements that Obama is associated with, but, you know, now Republicans are kind of adopting on their own. But on the flip side, with Medicaid expansion, you know, the loss of some of these gubernatorial races is immensely important. And Jeff Young and I wrote about this. I mean, we're talking about like 2.5 million people in six separate states who were following in the coverage gap, which is they were too rich to qualify for Medicaid, too poor to get the subsidies, and because the state hadn't expanded Medicaid, they couldn't get any health insurance. Had that election changed, it would have started the state down the road towards expanding Medicaid, which would have demonstrably changed people's lives, would have saved people's lives. I think that's objectively true. And that didn't happen today. I mean, Florida with Rick Scott is the best example where he sort of, you know, informally or, as you say, casually endorses Medicaid expansion, but hasn't lifted a finger to do it. You know, that's one of these results that, like, will literally affect people's lives. And, you know, we can sort of game out all the shenanigans on the federal level and what this means for each party and, you know, how a Senate Republican Senate will deal with the President Obama. But, you know, when we're talking about Medicaid expansion, we're talking about life and death. And that's, you know, that's a consequence of this election that shouldn't go unnoticed.
Jason, what do you think?
You know, we've been talking about the Senate. It's been the sort of marquee event. Will the Democrats maintain the Senate? I agree that, like, the more interesting story is gubernatorial elections. We came into this night thinking that, well, if there's going to be good news for Democrats, it's that they brought all these governor's races really close. Maybe they'll pick off some. Maybe they'll pick off Scott Walker.
Yeah.
Maybe they'll pick off Rick Scott. Maybe they'll pick off Snyder in Michigan.
Yeah.
Didn't do any of that.
Yeah.
Didn't do any of that. And then you dig a little lower. Dig a little lower at state legislature level. You know, Republicans are going to pick up a lot of state legislatures as well.
Yeah.
Democrats have become a party, in my opinion, Democrats have become a party that's become very, very good at winning presidential elections because the map favors them.
Yeah.
And the Republicans have, you know, historic log jams and difficulty, like, sort of like reconnoitering when they veer left, when they veer right, how to find a center, how to keep the base in play. They have problems with that. But as you come down, you have to understand that, like, at the state house level, we're talking about an office that literally controls the levers of, like, the basics of democracy, you know. Who gets to vote and when and how, where districts are drawn. This is where reproductive rights are being rolled back. You know, everyone makes a big deal. Mark Udall went into this race against Cory Gardner thinking that this one note, you know, war on women thing was going to win him the thing, was going to beat Cory Gardner. And, you know, he had a supporter at a rally close to the end, you know, exasperatedly yell, "You're in favor of other things too, not just reproductive freedoms." But here's the thing. Cory Gardner isn't going to be one of the people, like, with his hand on the tiller. Well, that's a bad pun. But with his hand on the tiller, like, leading the charge against reproductive freedoms. This is all happening at the state legislature level. And the Democrats need to find a way to get down into the unsexy races and start winning them. If they can't do that, they're going to lose. They're going to be running from behind again and again and again because talent is flowing up through these channels.
But I think this all goes back to what Sam said at the very beginning. If you don't have ideas and if you don't have an agenda, then you don't have any ideas and you don't have an agenda that people can get excited about. If there's nothing for people to get excited about your party, you can't win.
Yeah.
And that's unfortunately, for Democrats, unfortunately, I think that's what happened tonight. And if Democrats don't learn the lesson that, you have to give people something to vote for, they're going to keep losing. But for now, this is So That Happened.
Yes.
From the Huffington Post. And
which tonight's special.
We are very tired, and at least I'm a little bit drunk. So we're gonna go home now. But thanks so much for listening. I'm Zach Carter.
I'm Sam Stein.
And I'm Jason Lincolns.
And we miss you guys already. Thanks so much for listening.